Good morning. It's a great honor for me to have been asked to share a few words this morning as the representative of the class of 1955. And in that spirit, and on behalf of our class, I want to extend a warm paw welcome to the other classes gathered here this morning. And President Bottoms, you were but a lad of 10 when this group of DePauw seniors graduated. So I'm proud to present you to the class of 1955. A 50th reunion is a big deal, as I quickly came to understand, and the organizing job is a very demanding one. 28 members of our class stepped forward to provide the leadership to make this possible. And I want to extend special thanks to Tom Sargent and Phyllis Nicholas for their work on the annual fund, to Ian Rowland for major gifts, and to Sitter Trudgeon for organizing all of the social events. We are also pleased to acknowledge the excellent work of Jason Petrovich, class of 1993, and director of 50th Reunion Programs, who nudged us and inspired us and made it fun along the way. Thank you, Jason. (clears throat) 1933. Not a year that typically comes to mind in thinking about a college experience that ended 50 years ago. But 1933 is the year when most of us were born and began the formative journey that brought us to this campus in the fall of 1951. If you were like me that September, you were as green as the freshman beanies we wore, unsure what the next 4 years held, and more than a little scared. Between 1933 and 1951, the world changed dramatically. We were born in the midst of the Great Depression. We were toddlers when a series of controversial social programs, known as the New Deal, gave the government a new and larger role in the lives of American families. Other historical markers are associated with our young lives. World War II began on a Labor Day when we were 5. Atomic bombs fell on 2 Japanese cities, and the war ended in our 12th year. As we began junior high school, the bright promise of peace was clouded by a Cold War. And in our last years in high school, a shooting war in Korea became close and personal, as friends were sent off to duty on the front lines, even as we prepared for college. We enrolled in the fall of 1951 as one of 399 freshmen. 312 of us graduated, 298 as bachelors of arts, and 14 with a degree in music. 62 among us have died. We entered DePauw at a time when the American dream held the expectation that we could aspire to be part of the great growing middle class, where the promise of open doors and open opportunities seemed unlimited. Personal responsibility, commitment, and loyalty were values that seemed to be central to our lives. We were part of what became known as the Silent Generation, the decade of the 50s. It was characterized by the absence of social dissent and a respect for orderly behavior and the tradition of authority. The 50s are remembered as a time of conformity, a stereotype that is surely reinforced in the pages of the Mirage, with its photographs of co-eds wearing their hair in page boys and the young men in suits and ties. Few of us had cars, fewer still drank on campus, and one could even find in the quiet hours that were so effectively enforced on weeknights in the houses and dorms additional evidence that we were indeed part of the Silent Generation. Our music was different, we danced slower. For most of us, campus life centered on fraternities and sororities, that consequence of the university's tradition of relying on the Greek system for housing and for student entertainment. the generations on either side of us were more famous, more celebrated, and thought to have a more profound impact on our national character today. Mom and Dad were part of the greatest generation, which came of age during the Depression and the Second World War, and which provided the leadership for what we now think of as modern America. The children born to us in the decade after 1955 are among the baby boomers. But beneath the surface of the 50s and the sense of conformity our generation evoked, things were stirring. The status quo was beginning to dissolve. Ideas were percolating that would change the American landscape in the decades ahead. We grew up listening to radio, but television came of age while we were here. As we gathered in front of the black and white screens to watch a political event, the Army-McCarthy hearings in the spring of 1954, we were taking a look into a future in which this medium would become a dominant influence in American life. The women who challenged for student leadership at DePauw would become part of a national movement toward liberation in the 1960s. And we were part of the last generation of young, educated people that did not live together before marriage. The pill was one of the influences that changed American culture during the 60s, but we should remember that the lab work behind its discovery took place in the 50s. The federal highway system began, and as it shaved hours off the trips to Greencastle, it also created a mobile society where we could take our DePauw education in search of opportunity anywhere. The men and women of DePauw in 1955 turned out to be a class of achievers in pursuit of the American dream. 60 of us went on to graduate school, and 33 of us earned a doctorate, including 15 medical doctors. Nearly 15% of the class devoted their lives to public service, teaching, medicine, the ministry. And among the men who went into business, 26 rose to become chairman, president, or CEO. A handful of women owned small businesses, but most followed the traditional paths of the times as housewives, homemakers, teachers, and leaders in the volunteer world. On this weekend of reunion, we can easily recall our favorite teachers, images of them, and a sense of their influence in shaping our young minds now emerge from distant memories. The sounds of their voices can be recalled, along with visions of how they posed at the lectern, how they moved around the classrooms and scrawled notes and lesson outlines on the chalkboards. Most of the facts and ideas that embodied their lectures have faded from memory, and what remains for us is the gift of their teaching, how to learn, how to think critically and analytically, a love of ideas, a sense of curiosity and wonderment about life. Reunions are, after all, for old friends to swap stories about what was important to us a long time ago. We see older faces and remember them as young. It is a time for hugs and laughter, and the laughter that one hears this weekend is truly a joy to behold. In this spirit, we also are sharing memories of student life that we experienced outside the classroom. My life in journalism had its roots here, and I have a special fondness for a place we called the Duck, a long-forgotten campus greasy spoon where the Walden Inn now stands. A lot of DePauw journalism was conceived there over coffee and donuts and more than a few cigarettes. I remember it best, not for the stories we planned or the challenge of covering a somewhat cranky university administration, but for the larger understanding that DePauw students could express their views freely and that the campus newspaper could be a vehicle for this purpose. We took our journalism seriously, and we were inspired by the tradition of journalism we found at this university. Professor Tom Emery told me a while ago that through the 1960s and 1970s, when students protested against the Vietnam War and the social structure of the university, it was changing, and the independence of the DePauw as a student newspaper remained unchallenged, even as it spoke vigorously of student frustration and urged the administration to give constructive change and dissent a chance. I have had the privilege of maintaining a strong connection with DePauw over the years. Particularly important to me has been the opportunity to help shape the ideas for the Pulliam Center for Contemporary Media as a place at the center of student life that honors the values of a free press and free expression. This experience has given me a deep appreciation for the energetic leadership President Bottoms has invested in the idea that a liberal arts education should include exposure to the news media. And as we think this morning about the extraordinary changes that have taken place during our adult lives, we must consider how well this university prepared us for the evolving nature of the communities, the nation, and the world in which we now live. In many respects, it is a world that we could not have imagined 50 years ago. Medical science, along with some sensible living perhaps, has enabled more than 80% of the class of 1955 to survive into our 70s. The DePauw of our time, unfortunately, did not include many students of color. There was not a single African-American student in the class of 1955. And as I recall, the Supreme Court decision in the spring of our junior year, ruling that school desegregation on the basis of race alone was unconstitutional, made very little impact on campus. But it is worth noting that at the commencement exercises for the class of 2005, 13% of the 495 graduates were students of color or other ethnically diverse backgrounds. DePauw's Methodist traditions brought us to chapel twice each week, and those hours on the hard benches of Goeben Church were intended to enrich our religious values, but no chapel speaker of the time could have warned us of the conflict we are now witnessing over the role of religion in public life and the rise of fundamentalism or the scandals in the Roman Catholic Church or the global violence in which religion is a powerful influence. I am sure that service to our communities through our work and through our outreach that voluntary association makes possible has brought satisfaction into the lives of many in the class of 1955. But in the cycle of life and the movement of time, we are now less engaged and more often find ourselves in roles as observers of the passing scene, while other younger citizens carry on as leaders and contributors. There may be frustration in this reality, especially as we wonder why the course of events and the decisions of our leaders could have brought a prosperous and generous people to the turbulent times that now face our country. Looking back at our experiences on this campus, the DePauw years were the best of times for some, but perhaps not for others. For some, the best of times came in the decades afterwards, through love and companionship, family and achievement. Maybe the best of our times are now, enjoying the warmth of family, the memories of a good life, and the knowledge of having tried to do the right things. In reflecting on the meaning of the passing years and on the opportunities they presented us, I hope we can more clearly recognize the contributions of this place and the importance of knowledge, the excitement of ideas, and the capacity for learning it shared with us. At almost every commencement exercise over the centuries, graduates are urged to go off and make the world a better place. And the DePauw class of 1955 heard that message. But it's a very big world, you know. And making change for the better is done in small incremental ways. A step forward here, a step back there, another step forward. Our world is a better place than it was 50 years ago, and we have contributed through service to society in countless ways, on our own terms. We are no longer able to look ahead at life and see limitless possibilities as perhaps we could in June 1955. But we can continue to enjoy the lessons of our DePauw experience, continue to learn, continue to take life with curiosity and wonderment, continue to serve society, and continue to love and care for one another. And I hope there is joy in each of your lives and that these are, in fact, the days. Thank you very much.